Okay, we're going to talk today about the religious and philosophical background of the New Testament. And when I say the religious and philosophical background of the New Testament, first of all, we're talking about the Gentile world. We'll talk next week about Judaism. When I say background, I don't mean, as some people would probably say, that the religion and philosophy of the day had a great influence on the New Testament. Okay, because it did not. The New Testament is inspired by God. It comes directly from God, and the writers were not picking up ideas from Greek philosophy and that kind of stuff. Okay, some people would have you believe that, but it's a bunch of baloney. The people that believe that are just skeptics. All right, so we're going to talk today about Gentile religion and philosophy. First of all, religion. At first, most of the people of the part of the world that's covered in New Testament times, the Roman Empire, most of those people at first were animists. Animists, A-N-I-M-I-S-T-S. An animist is a person who worships or placates spirits or gods. They believe that everything has a spirit in it. Okay, there's a spirit of the rain, the wind, the fire, the trees, the fields, the rivers, etc. Everything's got a spirit in it. You know, there might be a big rock. Well, there's a spirit in that rock. Okay, a spirit in the oak tree outside your house. That kind of thing. They believe that those spirits can do them good or do them ill. Okay, and so you spend your life worrying about what the spirits are going to do to you and trying to keep on their good side. Many, many, many people in the world today are still animists. When we went up into northern Thailand and we went into a home, there was a little shrine there where they offer sacrifices to the spirits. And it might be flowers, it might be fruit, they might bring something in and burn it. They probably burn incense and things like that at this little shrine because they want the spirit of the field to be nice to them and give them a good crop that year. They want the spirit of the rivers to be nice to them and not drown their kids, and so on. And so they spend their life in fear of what the spirit may do and trying to do things to keep the spirit happy. And if something goes wrong, then, oh my goodness, I must have done something that made the spirit angry at me. And now I've got to make a sacrifice to try to get back on his good side. Okay? These spirits are not good. They're not holy, anything like that. In fact, they're usually pretty rotten. They're easily offended and hard to placate. Okay, so that's animism. This, in the Greek and Roman world, this evolved into the worship of what's called the Greek pantheon. Pantheon just means all the gods. Okay, the Greek pantheon. Various cities or provinces or nations would claim certain gods. It's like in Roman Catholicism, a city or a country might have a patron saint. Okay, well, they had that in the Greek religion and the Roman religion as well. Like, remember the riot in Ephesus when Paul was there? And they spent hours crying out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians, great is Diana of the Ephesians." She was the patron god of that city. They worshipped all the gods, but she was number one, okay, in that city. And other cities had various ones. The Roman and Greek gods were the same, but with different names. Okay, they had the same gods, but different names. The Roman Jupiter is the Greek Zeus. Juno in the Roman religion is the Greek Hera. Neptune in the Roman religion equals Poseidon in the Greek religion, Mercury equals Hermes, and so on. And there's, you know, a huge long list of these gods and goddesses. The gods and goddesses were basically exaggerated humans with a nature and desires like ours, but with more power. And if you read ancient mythology, they have the same physical appetites, they have the same nasty dispositions, and so on, as people, but they have the power to do great things. And so, basically, their religion created a god, or created gods and goddesses that were just like people, only more so. Okay, and they fight each other, and they're unfaithful to each other, and they marry each other, and they do all this kind of baloney, and totally unlike the truth of God. Greek and Roman religion was associated with gross immorality. Many, many, many of the temples had temple prostitutes, and it was part of their religion to go into the temple prostitutes. It did not satisfy the people, though. I think deep down inside, most of the people realized this is a bunch of baloney. It did not satisfy, and their religion was in decline in the New Testament period. It was going downhill. It was kind of like liberal religion in our day. Fewer and fewer and fewer people were paying any attention to it. They still had huge churches or huge temples. They still had magnificent statues and that kind of stuff, but the people didn't give a rip, by and large. This provided a fertile field for the gospel. Okay, their dissatisfaction with their main religion, the worship of all these idols, provided a fertile field for the gospel. Many converts were made. Some of the emperors and some of the lower officials equated allegiance to their religion to patriotism. Okay, during the Roman Empire, they began to have emperor worship. They declared that the emperor was God. And sometimes they pressed this point very strongly. Sometimes they didn't. Some emperors demanded that everybody bow down to their statues. Other emperors didn't really care that much. And that's one of the reasons why in the first century and later there was fluctuating persecution. Sometimes there was harsh persecution against the Christians, sometimes there was not. So they said that allegiance to the state religion is the same as patriotism. And so if you weren't bowing down to the statues, you're a traitor. You're a subversive. You're a danger to the government. And so they would persecute them. They persecuted Christianity. They also persecuted Judaism. Okay, they persecuted the Jews because they also wouldn't bow down to the statues. They especially persecuted Christianity because Christianity was aggressively evangelistic. The Jewish people wanted to do their own thing. They wanted to be faithful to their religion, but they weren't trying to make masses of Gentile converts. Whereas the Christians were aggressively trying to evangelize people. Also in the Roman Empire, there were many who followed occult practices like astrology, magic, exorcism, which is, of course, casting out of demons, augury, A-U-G-U-R-Y, augury, which means telling the future by looking at the organs of dead animals. Sounds like fun, huh? This was a big deal, especially among the Romans. Okay, they would take a certain kind of an animal, and I think it had to be, you know, different ones for different needs or whatever, and they'd kill it, they'd cut it open, and they'd have a priest or somebody come and look at, you know, its liver and its kidneys and so on. And supposedly, things that they would look for in those dead organs told them the future. Okay, now obviously it's a bunch of nonsense. I mean, there could be demonism. I'm sure there was demonism involved in it. But the idea that you can look at, you know, a dead pig's intestines and tell what's going to happen next week, that's nuts. But they believed it. Some people did anyway. Also consulting the dead through mediums and that kind of thing. Even some Jews were involved in the occult, even though it's forbidden by the law of Moses. In Tiberias, there is a synagogue, the ruins of an ancient synagogue that has the signs of the zodiac in a mosaic on the floor. Okay, now you would think they would never, ever do something like that, especially in a synagogue. But they did. So there were some Jewish people that even got involved in the occult, even in their synagogues. That's unbelievable. But you can see it. Okay, so that's Gentile religion. The worship of hundreds and hundreds of gods and goddesses with temples and shrines and all that kind of stuff. And also, as I said, much, much immorality. Well, let's talk about Gentile philosophy. And some of this is very dull, and some of it is interesting. Okay, so bear with it and try to get some of these ideas. Philosophy was basically an attempt to find satisfaction through the intellectual, since religion did not satisfy. Okay, they realized that there was an emptiness in their religion. And so they looked for some other way to find peace of mind, some other way to find satisfaction, some other way to explain, you know, why we're here, how we got here, what's the purpose in life, and that kind of stuff, which, you know, people have questions like that and they want to know the answers. Well, they came up with a lot of different answers, most of which are just really, really lousy answers. The first one is Platonism. Platonism, Platonism. It's obviously named after Plato. The idea of Platonism is that the material world is not real. The material world is not real, which sounds kind of like Christian Science and some other things like that, which is, I mean, this pulpit, it doesn't exist. Okay? It's not there. Those chairs, your body, it's not real. It's not really there. The world of the world of ideas is real. And material things are imperfect copies of the ideas. Okay, so you're a figment of somebody's imagination, apparently. It's amazing to me, how are we all imagining the same thing at the same time? It's really kind of crazy. And so what we see and what we can touch and so on is not real. Those things are just copies of ideas, and the ideas are real. Okay, now this was not a very popular philosophy, probably because not very many people could swallow it. Okay, it's like Christian Science. Christian Science is a very, very small cult, because there's not very many people dumb enough to say when they're sick, when they're in pain, "I'm not sick, it's just my imagination." Okay, there's no such thing as sickness. And there's no such thing as sin, and there's no such thing as death. Most people aren't dumb enough to swallow things like that. But some people are. It wasn't very popular. It provided basically no satisfaction to anybody. It is somewhat reflected in what's called Gnosticism, which is the next thing we're going to study, which was an idea that began to prevail in the first century and went for some time after, and was something that Christianity had to fight. Gnosticism says that the material is evil. Okay, the material is evil. Salvation comes through knowledge and through renouncing the material. Now, Gnosticism's got some different... It's got like... maybe we'd say it's got a split in it. And some Gnostics held one thing and some Gnostics held another. But the basic idea is the material is evil. Salvation through knowledge and through renouncing the material. This led to two contradictory practices. Two contradictory practices. On the one hand, there were some Gnostics who practiced asceticism. Asceticism, which is the denial of physical pleasures. Okay, the denial of physical pleasures. Asceticism is like the monks in the desert. Okay, that build a monastery out in the middle of nowhere and deny themselves all comfort. They deny themselves marriage. They deny themselves comfortable things. They would not have, you know, a nicely padded pew. They would have a hard wooden pew. They would sleep on a board. They would wear a hair shirt under their robe so that they would itch all day long. Okay, they might beat themselves with a whip or something like that. That's asceticism. Deny yourself all physical pleasures. They would only eat, you know, oatmeal for breakfast and beans for lunch and rice for supper and nothing else. Okay, that's asceticism. On the other hand, some Gnostics practice the exact opposite. Lasciviousness and sensuality. Okay, which is the gratification of all fleshly desires. And then you think, well, now how can, I mean, these guys are, you know, they're the gourmets, they wear the best clothes, they eat the best food, they have the most luxurious homes, you know, they would never dream of going out into the desert. You know, they're going to stay in the world and they're going to be as fleshly as they possibly can. Well, how can one philosophy produce two different things like this? Well, if the material is evil, it's easy to understand asceticism. Okay, the material is evil, so I'm going to treat my body terrible. I'm going to be as uncomfortable as I can possibly be, and maybe that's going to gain my salvation, whatever they thought salvation was. The idea of the others was this, that the material, it's not only evil, but it's unreal and temporary. So it doesn't matter what you do. It's not going to last, so don't worry about it. Just go ahead and enjoy it while you can, and you know, it doesn't really have any impact on your future. In the first century and later, some Gnostics began picking up some Christian ideas and terms. Okay, Christianity didn't pick anything up from their philosophies, the other way around. These philosophers began picking up some ideas and terms from Christianity and incorporating it into their ideas, their philosophy. They did not accept Christ as God and man. There were some who said he was deity. There were some who said he was man. But they did not accept the idea he was the God-man. There were some who said he did not have a body. He looked like he had a body. But since the material world is evil and he was God, he could not have had a body. There were others that said, yes, he did have a body. Therefore, he couldn't have been God. Okay, they could not put the two together. And so they were not Christians. There were some who claimed they were Christians. There were some who talked about Christ and made his name at least part of their philosophy. But they were not Christians. The next one. Neoplatonism. We talked about Platonism. This is Neoplatonism, which means new. The word neo means new. So, kind of a progression of Platonism. This was similar to Gnosticism, but it was more mystical. The body is evil, and the spirit is good. Okay, so your body is bad, but there's a spirit in the body that's good. Salvation comes by asceticism and by a mystical absorption into the infinite. Whatever on earth that means. I doubt that any of them had any idea what it meant. Okay, and they would capitalize infinite as if that makes it something. Okay, so now this kind of sounds like Hinduism. The goal of Hinduism, you live your life, and if it's a good life, you're going to die and you're going to come back a little better. And if you live a good life that time, you're going to die and you're kind of going to come back a little better. And if you keep doing that, then eventually you are going to merge with, what is it? Is it karma? Is that the right word, the one I'm looking for? You're going to stop existing. Aren't you going to merge with Brahma and Vishnu? Okay, you basically stop existing. You're now gone. That's salvation in Hinduism. Okay? You've got all this cycle of living, dying, living, dying, living, dying, living, dying, living, dying, hopefully getting better and better and better, but they believe in the law of retribution. And if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Okay? Until finally, you just go out of existence. You know, the best you can hope for is someday you're gone. Okay? That's a real great religion, isn't it? Well, Neoplatonism is kind of that way. It didn't teach reincarnation, but that salvation was going to be this mystical absorption into the infinite. Okay, now since the body was evil, they thought the body was evil, they rejected the incarnation, they said God could not become man, and they rejected the resurrection. Okay, if the body's evil, you don't want the thing resurrected. You want it to die and be gone. Okay, so they rejected those two tenets of Christianity, the incarnation of Christ and the resurrection of Christ. They said those things couldn't happen. Not possible. Okay, the next philosophy. Epicureanism. 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 I'll spell it again. Epicureanism. 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 This is interesting. Okay? Epicureanism said that the world began through the accidental collisions of atoms in a great shower of atoms. Back in the beginning, somehow there was this great shower of atoms, and some of them accidentally collided. And as they collided, they stuck to each other and collided and collided and collided and collided until here we are. Okay? Kind of sound like the Big Bang, sort of. Okay? It kind of sounds similar to me. Back in the beginning, and where the atoms came from, they didn't say. Okay? It's much like evolution today. Okay? If we started out with a Big Bang, where did it come from? How did it get here? Who made it? And so on. They've got no answers. Well, these guys didn't have any answers either. But what this did, existence, everything we see, was just by chance. Well, since everything was by chance, there is no purpose or design and no absolute good. Okay? No absolute good. No purpose, no design, no absolute good. The highest good, was to do whatever provided the most pleasure for the longest time. Okay? The highest good, the best you could do for your life, was to do whatever gave you the most pleasure for the longest period of time. It could be abstinence from certain things, or it could be indulgence in certain things, according to whatever the individual thought was best for him. Okay, it's up to you. What do you like? Everything becomes a matter of opinion, a matter of taste, a matter of preference. Nothing is a matter of what's right and what's wrong. Okay, it's strictly you're here by accident. Figure out what you like to do, and figure out how you can do that for the longest period of time, and that's the way you should live your life. Okay? Now, to do it for the longest period of time might indicate that, well, I better be careful about a few things, because there are a number of activities that are enjoyable, but if you exercise those activities in the wrong fashion, you might just die early. Okay? So maybe you need to temper some of your things a little bit, okay, to make sure that you can still enjoy those when you're 70 instead of dying at 35. Okay? So that's the idea of Epicureanism. It gave a philosophic justification for doing whatever you wanted to do anyway. Okay, a philosophic justification for doing what you wanted to do in the first place. Okay, and it could be all kinds of things. I mean, just look around. Some of the things that people do and consider just to be the most wonderful activity in the world, I just can't grasp. Some of the ignorant things that people spend their time on, and it just, I mean, they probably think that what I spend my time on is ignorant too, but anyway. A philosophic justification for doing what they wanted to do anyway. It rejected the ideas of sin and a future judgment. Okay, which obviously, if we came about by accident, there's not any sin. Okay, there couldn't be. And again, if we're here by accident, then who is there to judge us? We weren't made by a God. Okay, some of them acknowledged that there was a God or gods. Some Epicureans were pantheists. They believed in all the Greek and Roman gods, but not a creator or a sovereign. Okay, their gods were not like the God of the Bible. Now, where does the idea of highest good come from? Where do you get an idea of good at all? Okay, if we're here by accident, we would never have a moral thought. It would never occur to us that one activity is right and the other activity is wrong. That idea would never come. Okay, the whole idea of morals would never have been invented if we were here by accident. We would be incapable of those kind of thoughts. The whole thing just doesn't make sense. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Stoicism. Stoicism. You've heard of people who are Stoics. Well, your idea of Stoic is probably not quite... people, when they hear about Stoics, just tend to think of people who, you know, the stiff upper lip kind of tradition, you know, ignore the pain, press ahead. Stoicism says that there is no personal God. Okay, no personal God. The universe is controlled by absolute reason. And they capitalize those two words, absolute reason. So instead of chance, everything is controlled by a progressive purpose. Okay, there's no personal God. There's no God out there who is a person. who thinks and acts as a person. Instead, everything is controlled by absolute reason, whatever that is. It's like in Star Wars, the Force be with you. There's this something or other floating around, pervading everything, and you know. But he's not a person. It's an it that is just there. I mean, it's stupid. It really and truly. I knew Christians who went to Star Wars and thought, "Oh, it's just wonderful." I thought, "Wait a second. That's contrary to the Word of God. The Force be with you." You know, it's not the Force be with you. God be with you. You know, there's a difference. And some people are so incredibly stupid. Some Christians are so incredibly stupid. It's unbelievable. It's like somebody they got the video of Lion King and said to me, "You know, I just didn't really see anything that bad about it." And I said, "Well, you know, I haven't seen it at all. But somebody told me that animals that died," and this has been years ago, so hopefully I can still get it straight, "animals that died went up into the stars or something, and the animals on earth could converse with them, and they'd give them advice and stuff." Wait a second. This is Christianity? Isn't this contrary to the Word of God? Haven't we gotten back to the occult and pantheism, polytheism, and that kind of stuff? Okay? If you can consult those who have died and gone ahead and now have more wisdom than you, and they're out there in the... Isn't this anti-Christian? You better believe it's anti-Christian. It's horrible. It's terrible. And you're going to let your three-year-old sit there, "Oh, isn't that cute?" You know, give me a break. Find your brain, please. Anyway, you know, it doesn't have to be full of curse words and people taking their clothes off to be bad. Okay? We forget that. It doesn't have to be like that to be bad. There's lots of stuff that's bad. That, you know, everybody's fully clothed and, you know, ugh. Okay. So everything is controlled by a progressive purpose. We must submit to reason and try to have perfect self-control unmoved by sentiment. Okay? Submit to reason and try to have perfect self-control unmoved by sentiment. Don't let your emotions have anything to do with what you're doing. Now, we've got to be careful of our emotions because our emotions can lead us astray. You don't want to be led by your emotions. But you've got, I mean, it's part of you, and sometimes you've got to consider it. And there's certainly times that you ought to say, you know, "Well, we're going to do this because, you know, if we don't, it's going to hurt somebody's feelings," or something like that. Now, you don't do wrong in order to avoid hurting somebody's feelings, but you can do right in the right way. Anyway, so their pardon me. Their idea, perfect self-control, which nobody ever had, unmoved by sentiment. Personal feelings are harmful. And they can be, but they're not always, certainly. Nothing can be changed, only accepted. Nothing can be changed, only accepted. Now that's called fatalism. Fatalism. Islam is a fatalistic religion. Now they believe Allah is a person, but they don't believe Allah really has a whole lot to do with us. They certainly don't believe that you can pray to Allah and He'll answer your prayers and so on. They don't really think He gives a rip. And they're very fatalistic. You can't change anything. Don't worry about it. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. A lot of Muslims are that way. Many of the Stoics were moral people since it encouraged self-restraint. Okay? It encouraged self-restraint. Control yourself. That's their motto, practically. Okay? So many of them were moral people. But the idea of a personal God whom you could know was ridiculous to them. They thought, that's nuts. You can't know God. There really is no God. There's just a power or a force out there. Now, how can a non-person, okay, to go back to the beginning of this, everything is controlled by a progressive purpose. How can a non-person have a purpose? Okay, only a person can have a purpose. To have a purpose, you have to think and you have to make a decision. So you have to have a mind. So you've got to be a person. This whole thing is crazy. It really is. How can a nothing have a purpose and rule you and me? Okay, it doesn't make sense. Totally unsatisfactory. Philosophy. All of these are unsatisfactory. The next one, cynicism. Cynicism. The height of virtue was to have no wants at all. The height of virtue was to have no wants at all. And this is really crazy. Okay, this is really crazy. They sought to be independent of all desire. Now, how are you going to make yourself independent of all desire? I don't want the physical appetites. I don't want material appetites. I don't want a new car. I don't want nice clothes. I don't want a nice house. I don't want comfortable furniture. I don't want... Okay, how are you going to do that to yourself? How are you going to make yourself that way? Well, their idea was that they would abandon all standards and conventions. Abandon all standards and conventions, and they would become complete individualists. Okay, now, I don't see how that's going to accomplish the purpose of becoming independent of all desire. But the idea is, okay, society says, society has standards. This is right and this is wrong. Or here are the conventions of society. A businessman ought to wear a coat and tie. Okay? Various conventions, accepted forms of behavior. You know, reasonable courtesy. I mean, we're losing a whole lot of that in this country, but various conventions and different cultures have different conventions. So they said, we're just going to abandon all that. Okay? Everything's off. We're going to do it all our own way. Okay? We're going to be complete individualists. They adopted insulting and indecent language and behavior to show how different they were. Okay? You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of the hippie movement in the 1960s and 70s. Okay, these are the hippies. I mean, they really are. You know, society says that you ought to wear clean clothes and take a bath every day or so. And so we're going to wear our bell bottoms 4 inches too long so they'll drag on the ground and get frayed and filthy. We won't get any new clothes for years. We'll wear the same ones for weeks at a time, and we will never bathe. Okay, that's the hippies. Okay? And in doing that, I mean, you could spot a hippie a mile off. You could also smell them a mile off. But they said they were nonconformists, which was nonsense, because they were simply conforming to a different standard. They all looked alike, and they all smelled alike, and they all acted alike, but they said, no, we're individualists, which was a bunch of nonsense. And the same way with these cynics. Okay? We're going to be individualists, and so we're not going to do the things that you guys do. So they were doing the things that they did, and they were conforming to different standards. Really nonsense. Crazy. It also sounds kind of like the back to nature movement. You know, let's move out to the mountains and we'll just live simple. You know, we won't need all these things. You know, we'll go back and we'll leave the car behind and I'll buy a mule and plow the back 40 and, you know, Ma can make homemade bread and weave cloth on a loom and make homespun and, you know, we're going to go back to nature where life is simple and life was good. And if life was so good that way, people would have stayed that way instead of, you know, adopting the things we've got today. It's all just nuts. Socrates had this to say about the cynics. He said, "I can see your pride through the holes in your cloak." Okay, I can see your pride through the holes in your cloak. It was just a bunch of nonsense, and most people back then realized it was nonsense too. Okay, the last one, skepticism. Skepticism. Knowledge, here's what they said. Knowledge rests on experience. And everyone's experience is different. So there are no standards to determine right and wrong, good and evil, logic and illogic, etc. So there is no truth. And I would add, not even theirs. Okay? Everything's up for grabs. And if you leave God out, this one kind of makes sense. Okay? You leave God out, and in fact, I mean, take God out of the picture. We're here by accident. We evolved. There was a big bang in the beginning, and all that exists is the material world. Then nothing else makes sense. There's no reason. There's no purpose. There's nothing. You can think whatever you want to think. That doesn't make it right. I can think whatever I want to think. That doesn't make it right either. There is no standard to determine what is right and what's wrong. What seems logical to you may be totally illogical. What seems logical, we can't know. So what are you left with? Nothing. I mean, this is the worst one of them all, as far as being satisfying. How would this ever satisfy you? I mean, these are the kind of people that, you know, would sit and think about it for a while and go blow their brains out. Okay? If that's what philosophy ends up with a lot of times. There's a lot of very, very, very smart people who swallow things like this or more modern versions of these things and then go kill themselves because there's nothing to satisfy at all. And so why keep on? You know, you broke up with your girlfriend, you're in pain, you're suffering. Why live? Why endure it? You know? And so they do that a lot. Remember Pilate? Pontius Pilate may have been a skeptic. Remember he asked Christ, "What is truth?" What is truth? As if there's no such thing as truth, and that could have been his philosophy. Okay, we've got a minute or two left. Is there anything that we missed in the study pack? Peter? Christian Science, I think, has some similarities to a number of these things. They are similar to Gnosticism. Christian scientists say that the Spirit of Christ came upon the man Jesus. He was not the God-man. He was a human. And the divine Spirit came upon him, but that God can't die, So that spirit left him, which is crazy because they don't believe you die anyhow. But this is what they say. The spirit of Christ left him before the crucifixion. Okay, so they are similar to the Gnostics in that they believe in a duality here. He was not God and man at the same time. So they are similar there. And of course, they don't believe that you should go to a doctor because you're not really sick. You know, you just think you're sick and you need to correct your thoughts. Of course, bad thoughts aren't sin because there isn't any. It's nuts. You've got to be an overeducated fool to swallow something like Christian Scientists. I mean, plain ordinary people without much education, they don't swallow stuff like that. It's the overeducated idiots that swallow stuff like Christian Science and like these Greek philosophies. Okay, I'm sure the common ordinary man, you know, said, oh, that's a bunch of nuts. So, any other things? Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.